Welcome to one of the five parts of our special series on technology in AP. Today, we're really lucky and we're discussing fraud, and we have a very special guest and topic. Kelly Paxton has come to join us to discuss fraud, and more specifically, or probably main focus, embezzlement, which is something that all accounts payable organizations, unfortunately, end up having to deal with at some time or another. So, with that, let's dive right in. And Kelly, how about telling us the craziest fraud you've ever encountered?
Well, now, this wasn't an embezzlement fraud. It was actually a string of jewelry heists, but I was working on defending the girlfriend of the ringleader. So it was really fascinating. And the reason why, I mean, it was a fraud, it was theft. It's about the money. Like, these people just wanted, as I like to call it, and no offense to clowns, clown money. They wanted clown money and they spent it like clown money. I mean, it's just kind of crazy. So they would go and they referred to it in the local newspaper as a version of Ocean's 11. They would scout out the sites. They would have, you know, the cars. They had it all dialed in. And it was just crazy because some of the stuff that they did, like they got lost one time. And they're like driving around trying to race out of this area that I know quite well that is really confusing. And they had done drive-bys and everything like that, but they still got lost because the pressure of the situation. The reason why I say it was the craziest fraud, it was the money and how they spent it. And again, when you steal money, whether it's embezzlement or jewelry or anything like that, you don't earn it. Right. And you spend it like a crazy person, like on crazy dogs, crazy teeth. And the girlfriend said when her boyfriend got sentenced, he was in the middle of major dental, like Hollywood teeth. And she goes, I don't think he's going to get those finished while he's in prison. So
yeah. I don't think he's going to get them finished either. All right. So one of the things about embezzlement is it tends to go on for some period of time. It's usually not a one-shot thing. What's the longest you've ever encountered?
So personally for me, 10 years. And it was a woman at a dental office. And I call it the hockey stick. You know, it starts like this and then whoop. So it's 10 years. Now, she has stolen the most of my personal investigations that I have done. It took her the longest. I had two men steal almost the same amount of money. One took 6 months and one took 18 months. So, and I was interviewing another fraud examiner yesterday on my podcast, Great Women in Fraud. And she said the same thing. She's like, women are a little more stealthy than men. They do it smaller amounts over longer periods of time. So yeah, it can go on because I say it's kind of like a little air leaking, or in a medical office, the fish tank just gets kind of more expensive every month and the doctor doesn't see it.
Right. And if you're smart, you do it little by little, I guess it's harder to detect.
Yes.
Okay. So I like to talk about red, white, and pink collar crime. So I had to look up what red collar crime was, and it's basically crime that involves some sort of physical altercation. It's not kind of what we run into, but we do run into white and pink collar crime. And I guess pink collar crime is a type of white collar crime.
Yeah, so we kind of have the umbrella of white collar crime, which is financial. Money, you know, insider trading, Ponzi schemes, bribery, things like that. It's generally much more investigated at the federal level. Big cases, think Bernie Madoff. He is the poster boy, rest in peace, for white collar crime. Now, pink collar is a subset, and the actual definition is low to medium level employees, comma, primarily women, comma, who steal from the workplace. So garden variety embezzlement. Okay. And then you have red collar crime, which is a financial crime that turns violent and potentially deadly. Like, I have a water district that I'm, you know, a customer of, and the woman stole $202,000. And when they confronted her, she went home. She came back because they did a terrible job investigating it. She blew everything up, like, you know, just literally, or, you know, computers and everything like that. And then she committed suicide. So that's a red collar crime. So, and it does happen because part of the reason it happens is these people aren't regular bad guys. They are people that don't have criminal histories, who have had good jobs. They don't ever think of themselves as criminals, yet they know they're stealing. But when they get caught, they aren't familiar with the prison system. They haven't grown up on the wrong side of the town. And so their world comes crashing down. Whereas if you get someone who, you know, I don't know, grew up in the projects or just grew up poor and parents were in the system, they understand. You get three hots and a cot. Like, but these people don't understand it.
And of course, I guess they think they're not going to be caught.
Well, they kind of think eventually they'll get caught. And usually they get sloppy. Like they kind of just get sloppy. And it's kind of a mistake a lot of times that gets them caught.
Right. Right. So you said they let her go home?
They let
her go home when they discovered the fraud.
So they had the woman who stole from my water district. They confronted her and they didn't take away her physical and computer access.
Oh, geez.
So she came into the office apparently over the weekend and like destroyed files, computer and paper. And then, you know, she had remote access, could do that. And then she apparently committed suicide. She wasn't even convicted. So I kind of say that's the sign of a guilty plea.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So Kelly, you've got a book and I want to try and share a cover about it. Perhaps you could tell us and hopefully I won't mess this up too much while we're doing this. Okay. You want to tell us about the book?
Yeah. So COVID did a couple of good things. And the couple of good things that it did was it got me to finish my book. I finally said, I mean, I speak for a living. I speak and train all over, you know, the U.S. and some other foreign countries. But COVID happened and we couldn't travel and I didn't want to travel. So I decided to buckle down and finally write the book that people told me I had to write. So this book, my daughter calls it a pamphlet. It is not a pamphlet. It's over 100 pages.
Don't you love kids?
Yeah, I know. What do they know? And I have all sorts of citations, so it's way over 100 pages. But it's a book to help not only fraud professionals and investigators such as myself, but it's really meant to help business owners. Because I can teach fraud professionals and accountants and AP professionals all day long, but at the end of the day, the owners need to understand that embezzlement can happen to anyone. No matter how smart you are, no matter how rich you are, no matter how dumb you are, it is not discriminatory. If you have money, you can be ripped off.
Right. And no matter how much or how little, people will sometimes say, oh, we're too big. Nobody would dare. Or we're so small. We don't have enough money. Anybody would care. So, hey, guys, if you're interested in Kelly's book, there is a link that you can click on in the notes below and you can get it from Amazon. I have it. And I tell you, I have a good chuckle sometimes when I read it. Although I'm guessing that's not why you put it together, not to give me a good laugh. All right.
A lot of people have said that they are surprised at my humor, which my family doesn't think I'm funny. But like these stories are really like they're jaw dropping sometimes.
They are. They are. Sometimes it's like, how could they do that? But they did and they got away with it. OK, so maybe you could give us a common example of what I call a common fraud. What happened, how it was caught. And most importantly, for our listeners, I guess, is what they could have done to prevent it and how, you know, what did they do going forward?
So I'm known as the fraud hashtag queen, and I like hashtags, and it grew very organically because I wanted to keep track of where I was posting things. So one of my hashtags is it's not rocket science. And you guys in AP know this. Like the money is here in the business and it goes to the suspect, and maybe it goes to the suspect's visa, but it doesn't go from the business to Liechtenstein, to Panama, cryptocurrency, to Dogecoin, to the suspect. It's simple. I'm not a CPA, but I can track money. And these people, and I'm going to say they are smart, but they know that they don't have to do all this crazy stuff. Like I did one investigation with a colleague of mine who is a CPA. And it was so funny. We did the investigation and then we turned over all in a little box, you know, to the FBI. And the FBI did a press release and said it was a very complicated fraud. And my partner and I just laughed because it wasn't complicated. There was an open bank account that the business thought was closed, but the CFO knew wasn't closed. So he just started shooting money into that, you know, bank account. It was not complex. So I just got such a chuckle when the FBI said it was a very complicated case. I mean, they literally didn't even have the most recent version of Excel to open our pivot table. So so they aren't hard cases. So if that's going to scare off a victim, don't. That's it. I have another friend whose brother, the family business got ripped off. And this is a good example. The office manager went to Costco one day and she came back because they filled up the break room. And my friend saw that she had thrown two pairs of Kirkland jeans. So you're talking $25. And she confronted her and she's like, oh, so sorry, so sorry. And my friend went to her brother, who was the president, and said, we need to fire Faye. And he's like, oh my God, you are so ridiculous. Like, she'll pay it back. Okay, fast forward 2 years or whatever. Faye has stolen $500,000 due to her raging gambling issue. Now, I don't think Thanksgiving was very comfortable between my friend and her brother that year because she had told her brother, fire her. And he was kind of like, no, you're being ridiculous. I'll just take it out of her paycheck. She saw that they weren't paying attention.
Right.
And I never want to victim shame. And actually, I got caught victim shaming the other day, which my apologies. It's your money. As the business owner, it is your money. And at the end of the day, you work for your money to provide for your family. And unfortunately, you have to be responsible. And you can't just, you know, sub that out because you are responsible. You're responsible for your bills, for your employees. I get a lot of victims that I hear them and they run the business through their head. Oh, God. For example, they're like, I sold 1 million widgets. I net $10 a widget. Therefore, I have $10 million in the bank.
Mm.
And I can make a $10,000 bank statement look like $10 million. It's not hard. Again, it's not rocket science. And right. I can't tell you how many cases, because I follow cases all over the country. They're like, she or he falsified bank statements all day long.
So with your $500,000 loss, how did they find it?
In that case, I believe the bank notified them that there was a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they didn't. And I went to the president of the company who I grew up with. And I was like, I want to take a look. Well, he wouldn't let me look. He's like, oh, it was very, very complicated. I know it wasn't complicated. I know he was embarrassed. He had shame and he didn't want to admit that, like, he didn't have controls right. And he wasn't checking. I mean, the guy was making bank. And this is another great example. I know of a guy who I grew up with tangentially. He got ripped off $250,000 and he posted about it on Facebook. And my uncle, rest his soul, who's never made $250,000 a year in his life, posts, hey, Jack, how could you be so stupid to let $250,000 walk out the door? Well, I reach out to this guy, Jack, and I was like, okay, that needs to stop. Like, you know, he never made that kind of money in his lifetime.
Right.
This was it is a very successful multi-million dollar business where $250,000 wasn't really on the radar because it was also in small little chunks.
Mm-hmm.
And he was busy doing the big picture stuff. So I don't like to victim shame, but at the end of the day, it is your business and you work for money. You need to keep track of the money.
Right, right. Okay. All righty. So can I ask you, before we go on with some more examples, what inspired you to write the book?
You know, everyone knows the term white collar crime. And no one knows the term pink collar crime, but I am on a mission. And you know, the title of the book is Embezzlement, How to Prevent, Detect, and Investigate Pink Collar Crime. I couldn't do pink collar crime because of Amazon and search engine optimization. Oh, so I had to do it that way.
But the new world we live in.
Yeah, I know. I wanted to do, yeah. So I call it Kevin Bacon's 2 degrees of separation. Everyone knows someone or has been themselves a victim of embezzlement. And it's the relatable crime. We don't relate to Bernie Madoff. I just read the new book about Bernie Madoff, and people didn't even feel sorry for his victims, which was wrong. Like some right. of his victims, yeah, don't feel sorry for it. But other ones, their lives were ruined and suicides happened because he took all their money. Right. But we don't relate to Wall Street. We don't relate to the Enron type crimes. No. We relate to our child's soccer or PTA or our water district or our municipality that gets ripped off by a person that looks like you or me. We right. relate to that because they live in our neighborhood. Bernie Madoff didn't live with us. He flew no. private. He had houses all over the world. You know, these are regular people who cross the line. And I want people to understand crime can happen. And that crime is going to happen to you more so than you getting ripped off or you getting your house broken into. Yet we put locks on our houses. We have burglar alarms.
Right. So can you talk a little bit about the fact that, which I know I was under the misconception until I met you, that pink collar crime meant crime committed by women when that's not what it means?
Well, women are just really excellent at it. They excel at it. But 90%, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, 90% of all accounts payable or bookkeepers are female.
Yes. So yes.
Hashtag, it's position, not gender. Women are in these positions. And the other hashtag, which, you know, if we take nothing from this, never underestimate a woman.
Yeah. Are you listening, guys?
My dad got ripped off by his secretary / admin / office manager. And it wasn't very much money. It was just a little bit of credit card stuff. Not, you know, nothing horrific. But he's like, you know, I always knew she was smart. And I was like, you think, Dad? Like, she knew he wouldn't pay attention to certain stuff. And
right.
she took advantage of that.
Well, that's what I always say is your employees know where the weaknesses are in your internal controls, and they are in the best position to take advantage of that.
And absolutely.
And a few do.
They know where every dime that comes in and every dime that goes out, because like that is their job. Your job as the business owner is to grow your business and to do the, you know, 50,000 foot level. They're down on the ground. They are boots on the ground and they know.
They know, and they know exactly how to manipulate it. Okay. So do you have some more stories or examples for us?
So one of the other things is these suspects are generally very well liked. I have only had one victim who said, I never liked her, therefore I never gave her access to my checkbook. And I said, well, that's funny because she stole $450,000 from you. And he's like, how? I mean, he literally didn't know how. And I said, your Visa machine. Now, this is a control that has been fixed, but she could refund to any Visa. And he had a vineyard and a wine tasting room. And he looks at me, he's a doctor, so this is a side business. He looks at me just wide-eyed. He's like, so how do you steal with a Visa machine? I said, you refund. And he goes, well, this is what happens. People come to my vineyard. They go into my tasting room. They try the wine. And if they like it, they buy it. They don't buy it, try it. And then I refund them if they don't like it. And I said, but that's how she did it. He goes, there should have never been a refund ever. And I back to a little bit of the victim shaming. I'm like, you never looked at your Visa machine.
Look at
your
statement.
He just saw the money going in. Yeah. He just saw money coming from the Visa account. He didn't see money not making it from the Visa account. And she would send it to various credit cards of hers, and she had a heyday.
I bet you she did. Again, there was a weakness. And if he just looked at the statements.
And he even paid for an extra service through the bank that was like this, you know, I don't even remember what they called it, but he paid extra as a percentage of sales for monitoring. And I, like, you know, personally, he should have gone after the bank just for the monitoring, just get your monitoring feedback. So that's the other thing that I like to say is we're all about artificial intelligence. You know, it's going to save the world. Well, if you don't open your bank statements, all the AI in the world is not going to help you. Right. And you know this, like, I mean, you work with, you know, hundreds, if not millions of transactions. And there's AI can give you some of the needles in the haystacks, but you have to look at the needles.
So can we talk about, it's a little off topic, but we've had some conversations about it offline. And the way you bring it up now, it's a good point, is this bit about signing checks and how people think that signing checks is a control. And, you know, it's like, signing checks, if the person doesn't look at the backup and they just sign whatever's put in front of them, it's worthless. And of course, we all know the banks don't check.
Okay. So I don't know, Mary, do you have any attorneys on your podcast? Because I'm going deep here.
Go deep.
So I see this article on LinkedIn, and it's a, you know, thing about an attorney. Actually, she was in Canada, and she's like, you have to have double signatures. And I had this moment where I was like, am I missing something? Like, what am I missing here? And
nothing.
So I literally cut and paste it. I send it to Mary, and I'm like, am I missing something? And we have this back and forth. Okay. First off, attorneys are more expensive than you and I combined. And to have an attorney put out in the universe that you need to have two signatures and it will stop embezzlement.
Right.
Like, I went, I sent it to another fraud examiner. It was like I had this brain blip. Like, who says that? And to think they're like a business, you know, mentor to actually say something like that. So yeah. Now the number one way people steal is forged or unauthorized checks.
Right.
But right. Like, so you can forge two signatures. I mean,
right.
Come on.
Right. I was doing some consulting work for a company, and they were putting two signatures on checks, and they were putting the backup on. And so the controller, I think it was, came to me and he said, what do you think if instead of wasting all that time about putting the backup on, so that we just stop doing that? Because that's way, and then just have the person sign. And I said, well, is that second signer looking at the backup? No. I said, well, then, you know, you're wasting time. Either put it on and let the person look, or if they're not going to look, then, you know, just let, you know, the guy who sweeps the floors sign your checks. I mean, what are you doing here, guys? You know, so.
Yeah, I saw that and I just, like, my head exploded because businesses, they rely on legal counsel for good legal counsel.
Yeah.
And to see that, I just was like, I was horrified. I mean, it is the number one way that people embezzle is forged or unauthorized checks. But now there's a woman, her name is Amy Wilson. She's out in, you know, the whole universe. And she stole, I think, $350,000. And I've talked to her. She's great. She's one of my felon friends. And she's reformed and everything like that. And she said she worked for two brothers. The younger brother was like the president, and the older brother was the CEO. She's like, I could forge the younger brother's signature all day long. She's like, never once did I try to do the older brother's because his signature was so crazy. So now this is another thing about women and men. Now, okay, sorry to my children here. If I needed one of my children to forge a document, my daughter's forging it because my son can't forge. He couldn't forge to save his soul.
Yeah.
Women are better at that. We have nicer handwriting. Like, to the gender, it's just more in our wheelhouse.
Right. Right. I remember once my girlfriend came into the room and her son, who was in the eighth grade, was practicing her signature. She said, I don't know what he was going to do, but this was not good.
Okay. The statute of limitations has passed and my dad has passed and my mom has passed, but my dad wanted to surprise me when I was moving home to buy a car. And now I paid for the car, but it was a, you know, a special deal, and he thought he needed to get it. So he didn't forge my name. He had my mom forge my name, my signature on the documents, because my dad couldn't forge my name. But it was all good. I love that car. It was an amazing thing. But like, my dad would have never forged it. But he's like, and my parents were divorced at that point. He's like, you know, can you sign? And of course my mom did. So, yeah.
But the truth of the matter is nobody would have checked the signature.
No.
So he could have.
Yeah. Statute of limitations is long past, and you know, he's up top. We think.
Yeah. And he had good intentions.
Yes. The intent was there.
Yeah. All right. So you have another story for us before I want to start talking about hashtags.
You know, so I love auditors. And actually, I'm going to show, crash, bang, boom. This. It says, I love audit because they always want to make things better.
Okay. That's good.
Hashtag tips find fraud. Now, I think I should have been an auditor, and I worked with audit a lot. And the reason why is because audit does want to make things better. But they sample. And so people will say, I get audited. And I'm like, yeah, well, they sample. And this is another great example. There was a woman who worked at a municipality where I lived, and she stole $800,000. And it was a well-to-do municipality. Mm-hmm. And they got audited every June. She had a raging gambling issue, and she would steal all the way up until May 31st. She would go cold turkey. I don't know how she did it for the whole month of June and start stealing July 1st. She knew that they only looked at June. The auditors came and they only looked at June. So one of the things I like to say is surprise and delight. And we usually say that for customers, like, you know, give them a free extra scoop of ice cream or something like that. I mean it for your employees. If they think you only look at checks over 5,000, pull 1,000. Surprise and delight. If they think the auditors come in the month of June, have the auditors come in October. Keep them on their toes. So they think, have them call them into your office and have your computer screen up with your bank statement and ask them about one specific thing. So it's like, wow, they're looking.
Right. Even if you're not.
Yeah. Just pull. I mean, yeah. And
I mean, look.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely do that. The other thing is open your bank statements. Just this week. Again, I go to bed every night with a Google alert on embezzlement, and you can't imagine how many I get. And just in the last week, I have seen at least two cases where they manipulated via, you know, Adobe Acrobat, the bank statements. And you have to be the first one to get your bank statement. Mail it home or mail it to a PO box that you go to, not they go to, you go to. You have to get it. There's a guy, and he's a reformed serial pink collar criminal. He's a guy, and he was an outside bookkeeper. And he said, I would get businesses who would hand me unopened bank statement. He goes, even if they would have opened it and not pulled it out, I wouldn't have stolen from them because I would have thought they looked at it.
Right.
They have to see you looking at it.
Right. Right. Okay. So do you want to talk about one of your favorite topics, hashtags? So I have two down. I have three. Trust is not an internal control, a pink collar crime. So let's talk about trust is not an internal control and then share some of your other favorites.
Sure. So trust is not an internal control. And actually I've been surveying my audience when I do presentations virtually these days, and auditors love that one. Trust is not an internal control. Because again, I read these stories on my Google alerts about embezzlement. I trusted her. He was like a son to me. You know, it's all about this squishy feeling of trusting someone.
Mm-hmm.
And trust isn't an internal control, because we have the fraud triangle, which is opportunity, pressure, and rationalization. You have to have all of those for a fraud to occur. We think we can only really can control for opportunity. You can control some for rationalization. And the problem is pressures they change. You can have a spouse who dies, who leaves you. You can have a kid who's arrested, like Amy Wilson's son was arrested and she needed to hire a lawyer. Those parts, some are easier to control than others. There's another guy, and I use this example all the time. He hired a colleague friend of mine. She dumped his data and he had to explain who had which responsibilities. He gets to Sally, his admin, and he goes, oh, don't look at Sally. She's too dumb to steal from me. Now,
hello.
Yeah. Who stole? Sally. Because he treated her poorly. He was hashtag never underestimate a woman. But trust, trust changes. We are not the same person. We would like to think that we are the same good person every day. But life happens.
Yep. And
I say this all the time. I can't get out of bed, and I don't think you can either, Mary, if we think we're going to get ripped off every day. So no. You have to trust people. You otherwise, your life is going to be miserable. But then again, and oh, I don't think I have my sticker. Do I have my sticker? Trust but verify. It's on the back of my computer.
Right.
Trust but verify. Test them. Pull a check. I had a woman who stole $250,000 from urologists. Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, the chief urologist would meet with his CPA every Friday in the office. Lisa's sitting in the office next to him. They download just, you know, their billing system and never once did they pull a check. And every check was made out to Lisa, even though it said XYZ, radiology, blah, blah, blah. Never once. So she sat there for, I think it was 18 months with the CPA in the office next to her and never once pulled a check, did they?
Probably laughing. Yeah. I mean, that's what the first things that auditors are supposed to do is, you know, here's a list. I want these 10 checks or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. But they sample like, you know, or they only look at things over a certain amount. Well, you know what? I can make $100,000 with checks of $250.
Yep.
So they might be looking for the $100,000 expenditure. They're not looking at, you know, $4,250.
Right. Right. And in fact, when you do any sort of a data analysis, inevitably, whatever the approval limit is, well, even like with the $25 for expense reports, they'll find that right under that level, there's an inordinate amount of activity, which,
absolutely.
Yeah, you have to look at it. You have to wonder why that's happening.
Yeah.
Okay. So trust, not checking. Do you see any other common mistakes that that companies make?
So I was listening. I'm a huge podcast person. That's, you know, I read, I listen to podcasts. I'm listening to this podcast. He's a very successful speaker. Like he's a speaker, coach, you know, consultant. And he's talking about the financial part of his business. And he goes, so my guy calls me every Friday morning and tells me what's in each of my accounts. And I'm just like,
who is my guy?
I don't know if he was a CPA or his bookkeeper or his manager. He didn't say. He just says, my guy calls me every Friday morning and we check in and he tells me what's in all my accounts. And I'm out running. And I'm just like, I want to, yeah! Like, you're trusting him to tell you the truth. You're not looking. Like, he should pull up his bank statement at the same time. And
He doesn't want to look at the bank statements.
Yeah, he's too busy. And I'm sitting there going, well, this guy's a lot smarter than me because he's making, you know, a ton of money. But I don't have that much money, so I'm not going to get stolen from like he. I attempted to reach out to him. Oh, and I did this other thing. Oh, my God. It was so funny. Well, it wasn't funny. I was watching a presentation, and there's a guy who's uber successful. Uber, we were talking in the billion. And I actually got to ask a question because they were taking questions in the chat. So I said, what do you do about fraud? And they actually did the question to him. And he so confidently said, I don't have fraud.
Oh, God. I never make a mistake.
Yeah. I mean, first off, he owns a bunch of franchises of a restaurant.
Oh, God.
Well, restaurants have fraud. So right. Now, what he meant to say is, I don't have fraud that is material. But he also is an investor in a business that I'm just going to say does some due diligence, and they're very, very good. But they're only looking way up here. So even that restaurant franchises that he owns that makes millions of dollars a year, there is fraud. So for someone to say, I have no fraud, I just wanted to scream. And then funny thing is, I reached out to him on LinkedIn and said, hey, I saw you on XYZ webinar. He's never connected. Because I think he's like, oh God, that's the woman who asked me about fraud. I'm going to delete her.
Yeah. All right. Before we talk about fraud therapists, I would just like to take a quick moment to invite listeners to subscribe. And if you're watching on YouTube, to ring that bell right on the top. Kelly, so I was really interested when I looked through your book and I saw you mentioned a fraud therapist. So perhaps you could tell us a little bit about what that is.
So my career started in finance, and then I became law enforcement, and now I'm a certified fraud examiner, private investigator, and speaker and trainer. And I think my next iteration is a fraud therapist. I probably should go and become a licensed clinical social worker, because I just had this last week. A friend had a friend who was in the newspaper for stealing $23,000. So my friend called me and she's devastated. So hashtag embezzlement hurts. My friend has helped her out financially over the years, knows that there have been challenges, and yet has been incredibly generous to her. And for her to see this in the paper that her friend stole money from a nonprofit, it devastated her on so many levels. She's like, I've trusted her. She stays at my house. Like, I've lent her money. She's always paid it back. She's like, I don't know if I want to stay and be friends with her. Like, and then 2 days later, I get a guy, he sends me an email. Hey, I found you on some podcast. I need to talk to you. And he's in the legal profession, let's just say. So we make an appointment. He calls me up and he says, I am just devastated. I knew, and it's his ex-partner, like business partner, since he was a teenager. And he has stole hundreds of thousands of dollars from me. And I don't understand how I missed it, how I didn't see it, how, like, so being the fraud therapist, a huge, and I'm cheaper than a lawyer. So if you're paying by the hour or the 6 minute increment, I'm going to be cheaper than you crying on your attorney who tells you, well, you should have double signed your checks. I'm like, being a fraud therapist is helping people move forward. And the first thing I will tell a business owner is get back to work. You need to get back to what you do best. And whether it's making widgets or selling your time or whatever it is, you need to do that because you can't be distracted in your zone of genius. And, you know, we're not free. Like, sorry, we're not free. I have a really hard time charging people when they've been ripped off. Lawyers don't have a hard time charging people when they've been ripped off. So
no, they don't.
But, you know, I want a brain surgeon who got ripped off by his office manager drilling into my head when they're distracted. No,
no.
You need to get back to doing it. And it's my weird sense of humor. And they're like, this guy who's in the legal profession, he goes, I hate numbers. And he goes, and I get a spreadsheet. And he goes, 8 hours later, I realize I've wasted the whole day. And I'm like, you bill out at $100 per hour, you just wasted $4,000, dude.
Right. Like,
and it's not your smart thing. Like, I truly think any business owner could put together an embezzlement case because, like I said, it's not rocket science. It's money in the business and it goes here and you just track checks and or whatever. You could trace your money.
And you should do it.
I can do it a lot quicker than you. And time is money. Time is money, and people need to understand that time is money. The other thing is, like, unfortunately, this is the terrible part. Like, I need a happy career. I'm like, no, I have a ton of fun, but I do need a happy career. At the end of all of these experiences with a victim, they are so wrecked by the judicial and the law enforcement system because they think it's CSI embezzlement and it's going to be solved in a year. I have a client right now who is going on year three for her woman who stole $500,000. Now the case itself isn't complicated. It's very straightforward, but there's been a divorce because she's trying to hide assets, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. 3 years. It's 3 years of your life that you will never get back. There's a guy in Las Vegas who said he had to work an extra 3 years to make up the money that this woman stole from him. He was an electrician, owned an electric company. Mm-hmm. He asked the judge, he goes, she needs to get at least as many extra years that I have to work to retire. And it was three in his mind. You won't get the time back. Money's replaceable. Sell more widgets, sell more time. But that, I have to tell people, like, this happens to lots of people. And there's a secret society. So I'll be at a party and someone will hear what I do and they'll come up, oh, that happened to me too. And then someone else will hear. It's like they're embarrassed, but now they realize, oh, I'm not the only one. So right. That's the whole point of pink collar crime is not to normalize it, but to make people, I mean, in the past, people didn't come forward and, you know, report rapes and sexual assaults because it was embarrassing. I'm trying to like normalize that embezzlement happens.
Yep. Unfortunately, and it happens to everyone. Okay. Kelly, just again, reminder to those listening, there's a link below where you can buy Kelly's book on Amazon. And by the way, if you enjoyed this conversation with Kelly, you may also enjoy episode 62, which also shares Kelly sharing her considerable experience. On YouTube, a link will appear momentarily to the left. A thumbs up or comment is always appreciated.
Thank you so much, Mary, for helping me spread the word because the word needs to be spread.
I don't know why it's taking time to end, but let me try again.